Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Great to see you again, and welcome back to Go Beyond Numbers. I'm Ryan Ruff, your moderator, and as always, I'll be joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Tony Rose. And of course, we're going to have another great guest joining us here on the show today, exploring a really fantastic organization that is going above and beyond for so many people in need out there. But first, before we welcome on our esteemed guest, and of course, before we get into the, the weeds of the conversation today, let's go ahead and say hi to the man of the hour, Tony. Good to see you. How you doing?
Nice to see you, Ryan.
Yeah, how great to be
these days.
I'm good. I can't complain. The sun's shining. Life's good. Tony, we got a really interesting guest from your professional network, Miss Kelly Thomas Boyers, that's joining us today. She is the co-founder of Camp Cope and Adam's Place, two organizations that I know are near and dear to you, Tony. Why don't, before we bring Kelly out, and of course you guys get into the conversation at hand today, why don't you kind of set the scene for our audience as to why you wanted to have Kelly on the show today?
Well, in the theme, Ryan, of Go Beyond Numbers, what we do is deal with numbers, but actually what we do is involve ourselves in the lives of our clients. And I find meeting people like Kelly, who do things so different than what we deal with day to day here in our office and in my professional life, enriches and expands my life. And also, we as an organization like to support worthy charities and organizations that actually make an impact. And I think we've talked in other podcasts about one of my prime things is trying to make an impact on people's lives. Kelly Thomas Boyers is a close friend of mine, and I've grown to admire the work that she and the people that work with her do in the Las Vegas community, and am excited because what she does has an outreach beyond Las Vegas proper. So I like sharing, as we know in this podcast, with people from different walks of life with different perspectives. And so I thought it would be kind of fun and interesting for people to learn from Kelly about what she does, why she does it. And I think people that are listening or watching this are going to find that in their lives, what Kelly does is important.
I love that. Well, we're really excited to welcome you aboard. Kelly, thanks so much for carving some time out of your busy schedule to join us on Go Beyond Numbers today.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Tony. Pleasure to be here.
So Kelly, let's talk about you for just a minute. Give us 3 minutes about what your background is, where you came from, what you do. And let's just talk about how you got here. We'll talk about what here is in a minute, but let's talk about who are you, Kelly?
Well, thank you, Tony, for giving me this opportunity to share my story. In 2007, I was finishing my MBA with an emphasis in healthcare at UC Irvine and just starting to go on and add to my career in healthcare administration. And 3 months past my graduation, my oldest son was involved in a car crash, and he died from the injuries he sustained in that car crash. He left behind a grieving mom, but more importantly for me, his grieving brother, who was 16 at the time. And having had having a healthcare background in physical health, I'm a teacher by my first degree. I didn't really have a how-to book on to help with emotional hurts and emotional pain. And so I remember sitting in the back of the limo going, how am I going to do this? What am I going to do? How can I help my son? Because that was my instinctive reaction. So I looked at what was helpful to youth on coping with loss and grief, and far and away, peer support groups are very important. There's some evidence-based research that validates the importance of peer support groups with teens in particular. And if you dive down even further, we find them very helpful for younger children. That's why we have school groups, right? That they learn in small groups, they learn from each other. So I, my son was in Reno, Nevada when his accident occurred, and I found a children's bereavement center there. And I thought, you know what, I'll come back to Las Vegas and I'll find a center, because it had not been on my radar before. And when I got here to a city of million plus folks, there wasn't anything. And so I started asking, I searched for a year to make sure that we wouldn't be duplicating services by any means. And it was clear there was a gap in services here in the Las Vegas area. And when I started looking across the country, there are gaps, and there are communities that their response was to create a children's bereavement center. Our initial grant funding came from the 9/11 Foundation. There were so many children who lost parents during the 9/11 attacks that a children's bereavement center was very important, and to this foundation, to help start a children's bereavement center in every metropolitan city in the country. That's how they responded to the tragedy that happened in New York. So we received some initial grant funds in 2009, and it was great. It was seed money, $25,000, but it was a drop in the bucket on what we needed, but we didn't realize it at the time, because we just thought this is the thing that our community wants to do. We want to provide these peer support groups with a focus on coping skills education, and we want to make those available to every child. We don't need a copay. We don't want there to be a barrier to entry to get access to support. And the other component is that we wanted the parent to have access to support as well. But when the folks, when folks come to Adam's Place, they, it is a child-centric. It's about the child's grief. So they're carrying around a backpack, may have a lot of other folks' grief involved, like mom or surviving parent or grandparents, all kinds of things in their backpack they're carrying around. But when they come into Adam's Place, they get to take that back emotional backpack off, and we take it apart and we look and validate their feelings. So we got started during the 2009 foreclosure crisis here in Las Vegas. We were second in the country for completed suicide rate. The LA Times did an article on us because we were the only response for the children of the survivors of suicide. So we were inundated out of the gate. We just got on the track and we were running. And we rely on, one of the secret sauces to what we do is that we train volunteers to facilitate our group. And it doesn't matter, you don't need a psychology background. In fact, if you do, we're gonna ask you to take that hat off. We're gonna have you take any other professional hat off. We're going to train you to facilitate groups. And that's why we've been very successful for 15 years, because we know our lane, we know our best practices, we know the tools to help folks facilitate, feel comfortable and confident on the in facilitating group. And so that, from a financial standpoint, going beyond the numbers at issue, facilitator, volunteer facilitators keep our labor costs low. And we add infrastructure by having management and oversight and those therapeutic folks that help us create our curriculum and choose our activities that we work with kids. I visited a program. So Tony, I know I just keep going on and on about who I am and how my story started. But my story really was about answering an unmet community need. And that was helping children in real time find support after the death of someone special to them. That could be an aunt, uncle, grandparent. We never assume about relationships. It could be a child whose parents are divorced, but dad died in a different state, and they're coping with those kinds of adjustments. So we filled an unmet need in our community, and also have the challenge of transportation. So we don't have a subway system here in Las Vegas. We have an underground subway system growing, but nothing yet. And I mention that because we decided in our community that we would have a group where everybody got to come in and have a group. So Our age segmented groups are littles 5 to 8, middles 9 to 12, teens, and the adult caregiver, surviving parent. So everybody gets their group on one night. And I think that's also been a part of how we've been effective, because we've made it accessible and convenient for everyone in the family.
So let's stop here for a second. and the reason why I'd like to stop is that those people that are viewing this right now might want to go on pause and find other people in their lives that want to watch this, because I don't actually know a family that doesn't have some sort of trauma or unexpected death in their lives. I'll share with everybody that Kelly and I originally met because my son died unexpectedly. And so what brought me to Kelly was the fact of her work and the fact that we shared this common trauma. So go ahead, stop this video right now. Go find the folks that you think could benefit from us talking more about this, and then turn it back on when you're ready, because what we're going to do is I want to talk about trauma. I want to talk about grief. I want to talk about the issues of behaviors of those that are left behind. What happens? What is the manifestation of unresolved grief? I want to get into all those issues, Kelly, because I think those that are watching this or listening to this, I think will find a great deal of comfort in this information. So first of all, talk about what you see in families where there is unresolved grief.
Well, unresolved grief, 99% of the folks on death row, they will go back and look that they had an early childhood death. And those incidents are called adverse childhood experiences, when there's been a disappearance or a death of a loved one that disrupts the family unit, and the child needs the early onset of healthy coping skills. So we know that unresolved grief manifests in one way or another. And our goal with programs like ours is to help the trajectory towards healthy coping. Because one of the points you just brought up, Tony, that this is the thread of humanity between us is loss, right? Births and loss. That's what unites us as humans. And when we look at our own grief lines, grief timelines, and I'd encourage all your listeners right now to take out a piece of paper and draw a simple timeline, birth and where you are at your age right now, and start making marks on the first losses you had in your life and what age you were. And then we'll sit back and look at and determine whether you felt that you had some support or acknowledgement, you know, whether you lost Fido, whether you had to move across the country, whether a parent died, a grandparent died. What marks on your individual timeline established your relationship with healthy coping? Because sometimes children are swept under the rug. They think children are resilient. You know, they aren't sometimes invited to the funeral. They're not included in decision-making. Sometimes adults around them won't talk about it for the fear of upsetting them, when in reality, what's upsetting them is that their dad is dead and no one's asking them what his favorite food was, or we're not acknowledging him at a holiday. And I've not had any input on that. So I'd encourage your listeners to take out a sheet of paper, create that grief timeline, keep it in their desk, and visit every once in a while, because it tells you how you interact with others about grief. It's created your lens with the world. And if you weren't a mirrored empathy, you can't give empathy. So that's why it's so important with young people that we help give empathy, because they are the folks that will end up being empathetic adults. And empathy is a very important a characteristic that we need to interact with our fellow humans. So, unresolved grief results in sometimes substance abuse disorders. We're going to go healthy or we're going to go unhealthy with our coping. My goal is to have 98% of my healthy coping skills employed most of the time, and manage that other 2% that aren't as healthy. Healthy coping skills are tools on our tool belt that we use to manage these difficult feelings, and to give ourselves permission to feel those difficult feelings and actually manage them and have some sense of control over how I choose to interact with it.
So do you see more truancy when kids are unable to cope? More bullying when kids are unable to cope? Lack of control by the parents, things like that.
I think you make a good point, and that's teens. We just had a teens work in mobs sometimes, right? There's that gang violence is actually a reaction to grief, right? Because something happened to somebody, they want to react to it. There's no healthy way to do it. They're going to go around and use violence, and anger in such a way that's not healthy. We believe anger is healthy and okay. It's how we manage it, or how we actually communicate that anger. So the unresolved, any child, doesn't matter the socioeconomic, demographic, culture, it moves into an at-risk category when they experience an adverse childhood experience. They just do. They're for absenteeism, less presenteeism, they often feel more isolated. There's decrease in community interaction. There's lots of research in regards to children not having healthy opportunities or going through it, being on a healthy trajectory after a death or a loss. So if we know that as a community, then we can offer up responses, and that's what our group is about, is offering up a response and providing the opportunity to have support groups and coping skills education. We talk about grief and growth. We're going to grow with grief, and we want to have the opportunity to help build healthy coping from that foundation on and practice those skills. We don't talk a lot about emotional fitness. And I love your listeners to take that term with them today as well. Emotional fitness means that I'm going to employ these skills and I'm going to use them. I'm going to practice them. Because just like with physical fitness, when I have a broken leg, I'm not going to be able to run out of the gate. I got to practice. I got to rehab. I have to use some techniques that help strengthen my muscles. Emotions aren't any different, right? We have to practice making good decisions. We have to practice healthy coping. We get better and better at it over time. And so programs like ours are investing in lifetime life skills that sometimes we take for granted. And maybe we haven't had great healthy models in our household or a coach or a teacher. So programs like ours come in to fill that gap and that need.
Shouldn't schools be supplying this as a resource?
Yeah. I'm an educator, and I had no real background on working with the social emotional needs of students. I was very subject oriented. I knew all kinds of activities to teach, social studies or English, but not a lot of background in regards to what social emotional needs they might present in the classroom. So a child whose dad died 3 weeks ago or 3 months ago or 3 years ago, and I'm talking about bring your dad to school day, that's not a really pleasant interaction. So oftentimes teachers don't have the skills. Social workers within the school may not have the skills, because we're all about well, I shouldn't say we're all about, I don't want to make that generality, but our emphasis has been about academic performance. And so are we getting them to the next level, to the next level? When we know that if a child is has an emotional hurt going on, they're not able to concentrate. And sometimes they get mislabeled of having attention deficit disorder. So we don't want to mislabel anyone. We want everyone to get the right types of support in order for them to continue on an academic path of academic success. So what part of our program during the pandemic, because we developed a curriculum called Camp Cope, we were able to do virtual programs a week after the pandemic shut Las Vegas down and the Clark County School District, the fifth largest school district in the country, down, and everything was virtual. So we continued doing virtual support groups with our school partners. And we were very successful, and we were awarded in 2022 the Nevada School Counselors Association Outstanding Agency Award. But it dawned on us during the pandemic that one of the ways we could reach thousands of children was to share our curriculum and our training with existing school personnel so that they could have Camp Cope programs on site. And the beauty of that is the professional gained some skills, and they gain the support of our program because we have monthly coffee and coaching. We want to learn about their triumphs and their challenges and support them as they are Camp Cope facilitators. And then we're reaching kids in real time during the school day. They don't have to have transportation to get there. So we really believe in school-based programs.
So let's talk about, in fact, let's talk about, you had your first annual national conference. What was the title of that conference?
The national first annual national conference on children's grief support groups.
And I had the privilege of being there and attending that conference. And it was amazing. You thought you'd be lucky to get 50 people there, didn't you?
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that you filled up the room. You had, I think, over 100.
Mm-hmm.
And people were sitting on stairs because there wasn't enough room to sit at a table.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you obviously hit a chord.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell everyone who came to that conference? What kind of people came to that conference?
We had school counselors, school social workers from every private schools, public schools, Boys and Girls Clubs, other nonprofit organizations such as Candlelighters, which is a children's cancer group. That was the beauty of that, the conference, in my opinion, was to have such a wide variety of stakeholders that deal with children in grief in one room so that we could learn and be a source of support, because there's burnout in this profession and there's lack of resources. So I think we all made great connection through our the national conference. We had a pediatrician there. Because we all have the common goal of wanting to support children ages 3 to 18 who are coping with loss and grief.
So the thing, Kelly, that really struck me about that time, you know how when you go to a conference, people are like this. I mean, the people that are really into the conference are like on the edge of their seat. They're really listening. And there was no one dozing at that conference. They were anxious to get this. And one of the things that struck me is I know one of the participants during the comment session was saying that they were surprised to find out, you know, they were thinking, you know, maybe one student in their class was dealing with some kind of loss or grief. But it turns out there's generally more than that. What was that statistic, that how many people in a normal classroom would be experiencing that?
Well, we know 5% of children before they turn 18 will have lost a parent. And that's a national statistic. So when we do the numbers here, we know that any, and that's not grandparent, that's not a friend, that's not sibling. So we, the number here in Clark County, we estimate there's 20,000 kids any year that's coping with grief and loss. So the numbers are huge. This is a public health issue. Helping, and there's a momentum across the country. We're members of the National Alliance for Children's Grief, NACG. We attend their annual symposium and we subscribe to best practices of that organization. So this is a national health, public health issue, because this is the first spindle on the mental health wheel, is coping, healthy coping skills. And we know with a childhood, adverse childhood experience, that we have to employ, that's an early onset need. I've had folks come up to me after I've spoken to a Rotary Club, men in their 60s, 70s, and come up to me and say, you know, my dad died when I was 5. No one validated how I feel. I in my 40s, I realized that my alcohol disorder was because I had not had that support. And they really applaud what we do. So I've talked to lots of folks that are older that will comment about how and what negative impacts that they experienced because they didn't have support when they were a child. And that's why we are doing what we do.
Is grief the same thing as trauma?
No. No, and that's
could you help explain that?
Sure. I think that a simple way to look at it is that trauma is the incident. And if you can, your audience, if any of us can sit back and think of a traumatic moment that we had, I can remember the smell in the air. I can remember the sound of the car hitting the side of my car. I can remember whether I was cold or I can remember physical and mental and emotional sensations that I had. And that incident was traumatic to me. 99% of us will have traumatic moments in our lives because that's all different for everybody. What might be traumatic for you would not be traumatic for me. But whatever those traumatic incidents are, that's the moment. Grief and the experience of losing or missing someone is more of a long-term feeling or emotion. It's the sadness that we may feel, the longing that we have. So it's a more long-term versus traumatic. Trauma is the incident, and grief is more long-term. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. Are there resources in every city for people to get this kind of relief?
In Los Angeles, you have the program called Our House, and they do great work, and they have a lot of programs in schools. I know they have a 5K. They do fundraising to support their programs. I think they're based in West Los Angeles there, and I've had the opportunity to visit their program, so shout out to them. So it's you know, the perimeters of the country, there's programs, and towards the Midwest, you'll see programs, but this Southwest, the corridor in the country where we tend to have a lot of individual rights and don't, you know, I can take care of myself more, we don't have as many services, and there's a bit of a void. But I've had the opportunity to visit Orlando. I'll be going to Denver next year to visit their grief center. I've received training through the Dougie Center, which is the children's first children's bereavement center in Portland, Oregon. So it varies city to city in what they have in response. I know one of the things I'm putting out there is that we need a freestanding children's bereavement building. We have a wonderful program, but we need a building with a very comfy feel to it. We believe grief is a natural, normal reaction to loss. It's not, and while support groups are therapeutic, we don't refer to them as group therapy. Group therapy would indicate that a clinician is running a group. And And we believe that grief is natural and normal, that kids need to make connections. They need to decrease their feelings of isolation by making those connections and normalizing some of their feelings. So, and what's beautiful from a financial standpoint too is that support groups take a lot of pressure off the mental health system. So if 80%, 90% of the kiddos get that support and connection and find healthy coping skills and can practice them and know they have a support system that understands what they've been through or what their life challenges, that's great, because that 20, 15, 20% that may need individual help, then we have a number that we can get support for, right? So because we have a limited number of practitioners, and not all practitioners have a background on grief and loss. And so I encourage people to always ask questions if they choose to do individual therapy. What's your background on grief and loss? What's your background with children? Make a good fit in that regard. Give support groups a try. Some people are group people, some people aren't. We often get referrals from individual therapists that refer kiddos to come to a group because they want kids to be able to make connections in that group setting, to realize that they're not the only child in the lunchroom that's had a loss.
Do all these programs throughout the country that you're exposed to have a Camp Cope or something like that? Or are you unique?
We're a bit unique. When we started this, because I was a healthcare person, when I first started, they had open-ended programming. And I'm like, oh, how does that work? How do we gather any data about kiddos being in the program? And at the time, you know, 15 years ago, people were like, well, we don't really need the data. We make it open-ended, which is beautiful, and that's fine. And that open-ended just means you can drop in when you want. We decided that we needed a more structured curriculum, and we couldn't find any. So we just, I came in contact with a group that volunteered with us from a degree field called Child Life. And Child Life specialists are wonderful people. Their degrees and they have to take licensure. They are certified in Child Life, which is family development and concentrated skills on helping children and coping mechanisms when they're anxious, when there's this upcoming surgery. You'll find them in trauma centers, child life specialists, and you'll see them more and more in court scenarios and hospices and programs like ours, because their wheelhouse is age-appropriate education and tools to help kiddos when they're needing to self-manage, when they're dealing with difficult emotions. So, our child life specialists volunteered, and they really put our Camp Cope curriculum together. And we went with Camp Cope, and sometimes people are like, well, are you going off to a camp? We're like, no, we're an academic year-based program, but we wanted kids to feel okay about coming to a grief program. So we all know camps, you learn something. We wanted that expectation. Camps often have volunteers that are helping you learn things. So that also fit our definition of what we were doing. And then our emphasis is coping skills. So it's compassion, coping skills, and connection. So Camp Cope became our sexier title on how to get kids in programs that they felt okay about, and saying, I'm a member of Camp Cope, or I'm participating in Camp Cope. So we thought that's how we packaged it. And I think I've shared with you, Tony, a few years ago, I had a young lady reach out to me from Spokane, Washington. She goes, I've heard about you and your program. Can I come visit? She had lost her husband. She had three children, and she owns several Jackson Hewitt Tex franchises. And she says, I want to start something in Spokane, Washington. And I'm looking for the kinds of things that I want to employ here. So I said, sure, come look, you know, come talk to us. So she came talk to us. I showed her the program, and we do 9 hours of training, which includes diversity, equity, and inclusion in grief work, and an advanced facilitator training on top of that as well. So that once you do that initial 9 hours, we're going to follow up with an advanced facilitator training after you've actually run some Camp Copes to make sure that we've provided you the tools you need to be start on your journey and your career as a facilitator. But anyway, Tracy came down, visited, and I said, you know, go around, look around the country. I did that too, as far as what would be the best fit for you. And after a few months, she came back and she said, no, this your curriculum, what you're doing, this is what we want to do now. We want to take your training and run a Camp Cope in Spokane, Washington. And I'm so very proud.
So all of a sudden, after being sort of a sleepy Las Vegas-based charity, all of a sudden you're getting a hell of a lot of national recognition, aren't you?
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I just got word on today, when we first started the program, car crashes and heart attacks and cancer were our top three referral to our program. But in the last 5 years, it's been death by suicide and substance abuse disorders, which includes the opioid crisis deaths, that we proposed a model to the state of Nevada to. And so I'm hoping we will get some of the opioid response monies to have an even larger program. And the opioid crisis has touched every city in this nation, every village, every town, every city. And so there's a real need to have real time, on time programs that folks can develop and run that are not dependent on clinical folks, because there are parts of this country we have a real shortage. We have a shortage here in Nevada, and we're a metropolitan city, but in other rural areas across the country, what can we do to provide support and help in the overall community mental health and wellness?
You're also certified to create continuing education for several different social service types and licensures, aren't you?
Yes. We just received accreditation or approval to be a national provider of continuing education for the Association of Social Work, which means a social worker in any state other than New York and New Jersey can take our program and receive continuing education credit. So that's why we've had folks from North Carolina, Utah, California, Florida take our webinars and our training. And so, yes, we've been a small program, but we just really tried to execute the best of practices of what we could do. So we have a small footprint, but it's a great footprint. And we want to share that with other communities and across the country, actually across the globe, that, you know, it's not just about having a volunteer. It's about having a volunteer who has the tools and the to actually be helpful when working with youth. And so we wanted to provide those resources in a very cost-effective way. We don't charge children for our program, but we do charge for our training. But we're going to be your partner. We want to hear back from you. We provide monthly opportunities for you to get support. I've taken a lot of training in my life. I've had several degrees, but you know, it's that ongoing connection that people have made an investment in me that I think makes us a bit different, that we really do want to hear. We want to be there to support our community facilitators across the country.
And there's also something coming up for the second annual conference. You want to share that with the audience?
Yes, we're so excited. Our second annual conference for Children's Grief Support Groups will, the title is going to be When Grief and Trauma Collide. And so we're going to talk about grief and trauma in the areas of children with domestic violence and children in when they've been witnessed a homicide death. But we're going to really drill down and have some really interesting topics on our second annual conference. One of our facilitators, one of our partners, is a professor of forensic nursing, and he's been on board with us for several years, and he leads a virtual adult group. And I'll shout that out to all your listeners. The third Thursday is a drop-in adult virtual group, any type of loss. And it's a Zoom link, and you can find that on our website. It's free, and that's for adults.
Is that website address, Kelly?
It's adamsplacelv.org.
So Adam's Place, LV.org. What questions should I have asked you that I didn't ask you?
I think you made a great point. If you look around your network of friends and are there folks who might need support or help? And we want to make sure that mental health is something that we talk about and feel okay to talk about it. And knowing resources like ours is helpful. If you, annisplacelv.org and the National Alliance for Children's Grief, there's great resources and information. They drill it down state by state with the programs available. So in particular, you know, I had a relative contact me about a family who lost their mother and leaving behind some young children. And we were able to help her find some resources in her state that might be helpful to them. So I guess the question is, you know, look around your own network, feel comfortable asking questions about mental health, take the time to listen. The number one communication skill that we forget to use sometimes that is our ears is to listen to others and just be there and ask them about the person who died and be okay with talking about saying words like death and dying. And they sometimes we use euphemisms that aren't helpful. So some of us need to change, you know, move the needle and learn some new tools and new habits to help those who are coping with loss and grief. And we're just grateful that we're a part of that and making mental health something that we can all feel comfortable about talking about.
So I think there's something that Kelly sometimes has difficulty talking about, though she mentioned it earlier. They do not charge anyone. So you could be a zillionaire. Mm-hmm. And if you have a loss and you need help with your family, mm-hmm. dealing with the grief, they mm-hmm. never ask for a dime. Mm-hmm. The pity of that is that Adam's Place could be even more impactful than it already is if people would be generous and give a few bucks to help them further their work. So I don't generally do a commercial for the people that are on this webcast, but I think in this regard, charities like Kelly's that runs so economically with so little administrative expense, using mostly volunteers and interns from the university who are getting their master's in social work. Charities like this need your help. So at the end of this, we're going to put the site. You can click on it. There's ability to donate if you'd like to participate in some of their charity events. If you're from the Las Vegas area, there's going to be a golf tournament in the next month. There's going to be a wine and get together and dancing event coming up in a few months. And most importantly, look for that national conference. It's close to no one, is it? Anyone who wants to come.
Any community helper. You do not need to be a professional. You don't need, this is about community helpers, anyone who want to either gain skills, have better knowledge base on this area. We welcome everyone to participate.
You know, I know how busy you are, Kelly, and I'm so grateful for you. Mm-hmm. I hope you will share with your team how important they are to all of us in this world. And you know, I love you guys to death. So I appreciate it. Ryan, do you have any questions for Kelly?
No questions on my end, but as Tony alluded to a moment ago, you know, we've got a great, video to showcase some of the great work that Adam's Place and of course Camp Coat do. So we're gonna go ahead and roll that for folks.
When a loved one dies, teens and children can find themselves on their own. Sometimes they're forced to take on the role of a deceased parent and suppress their own feelings of grief and loss. They can start acting out at school. There's even a higher risk of suicide. When the 21-year-old son of Adams Place founder Kelly Thomas Boyers was fatally injured in a car crash, she realized Las Vegas didn't have a centralized place that provided the grief support that she and her younger son needed. That motivated her to found Adams Place. When my oldest son, Adam, died, he left behind a younger brother. I looked for resources in our community, which led me to look across the country on what other communities do to respond to children and teens coping with loss and grief. That journey inevitably led me to create Adams Place. We talked to doctors, social workers, school counselors to see what the need was in our community. And in Reno, Nevada, the Solistry gave us some great advice. They helped us get an initial grant. And in 2010, we opened the doors to Adams Place, and we haven't looked back since. Adams Place now offers comprehensive grief support programs for children, teens, and families at schools, hospitals, and hospices around the valley. The organization's signature program is called Camp Cope. At Camp Cope, children and teens connect with kids their own age and learn healthy coping skills. They can be open and honest about their feelings. It's all designed to build resiliency.
I have been going to Camp Cope because of the loss of my dad, and it just makes me feel really sad because, like, I used to go everywhere with him. Sometimes I cry about it, and I tell my mom that I miss him all the time. What I like best is being in Camp Cope is because I get to meet new people and make new friends. They're the same age as me, so they understand what I'm going through. The kids at the middles has lost their dad too, so like, I like it. The counselors are super nice. Talking about my feelings makes me feel better. I feel much happier every day.
We had our loss. Nobody else has had a similar loss in our family or friend group like the loss that we had. My husband passed. It was a complete and total surprise. I had no idea what to do. I had no idea where to turn. I had no idea who to talk to, anything at all. Thankfully, I was referred to Camp Cope, and they've been nothing but gracious, caring, understanding, giving me tools to help my daughter. Because that's my number one priority, making sure that she heals properly and she knows and she understands her feelings and everything that's going, that she's going through. It also has been helpful to me to know that I'm not the only one going through this type of situation. And also, it just makes my heart happy that she has met other children, as sad as it is that they're going through the same situation, but she's not alone. And she knows that. And that's what Camp Cope has done, given us hope.
As the demand for services from Adams Place continues to grow, so has the organization's reputation. Adams Place is now getting attention from other communities. In 2020, we were able to take Camp Cope virtual. We continue to support children and teens coping with loss and grief through our Camp Cope virtual programs. We also received inquiry about our Camp Cope curriculum and training from communities across the country. We now have Camp Cope programs in Spokane, Washington, and outside Columbus, Ohio. We are also hosting the National Conference on Children's Grief Support Groups here in Las Vegas and bringing in experts from around the country. Adams Place is also looking to establish a permanent home. This is our biggest need right now. One location that's large enough for our staff, volunteers, and most importantly, our families. So far, we've been relying on the kindness of hospitals and others to give us temporary office space and renting space where we can hold our Camp Cope programs in various locations throughout the valley. But now is the time for us to invest in a forever home. We're very optimistic that the generosity of corporations, small businesses, individual donors will allow us to build, create a forever home here in Las Vegas and the not-too-distant future. Adams Place provides compassion, education, and coping strategies to people who are struggling with loss, because no child or teen should grieve alone.
All right, well, Well, Kelly Thomas Boyer, so appreciate you carving some time out of your busy day to jump on here and share the great work that you're doing, you know, in this space, helping kids and their family navigate these, you know, the trauma and grief associated with sudden loss and an array of different issues that can come up in life. So we appreciate you. And, you know, we wish you the best. And of course, you know, your continued success in the future with the organization.
Thank you very much, Brian. Thank you, Tony, for this opportunity.
Of course. And folks, hey, look, we want to take one final moment, as we always do on the show, and thank you all for stopping by and spending time with us. If you enjoyed today's conversation with Kelly and Tony, you learned a thing or two, maybe you have a resource now in your back pocket for dealing with some trauma and grief via Adams Place and Camp Cope, well, make sure you hit that subscribe button then on whichever platform you checked us out on today, so that you don't miss out on any future conversations where Tony and I sit down with maybe one of his esteemed guests and we dive into a world beyond those numbers and really into kind of the intersection of numbers and, of course, life. Before Tony and Kelly, I'm Ryan. We're going to go ahead and say so long today, but we appreciate you stopping by and being with us on Go Beyond Numbers.